And, you know, I think you still have to embrace that. Of course, my friends, you know, I go out to lunch, dinner. I know that. So, and it's okay. There's nothing wrong with it at all. Mm-hmm. But there's a love of life here that's different than in the States or New York. I mean, everybody's in a rush in New York. So I think those are the things that were different but compelling to me. I was able to slow down, and like I say, I was able to learn, it's okay, wait in a line. It's okay to wait in a line and not be stressed out about it.
Olá e bem-vindo. Welcome to The Simple Life, an insider's perspective into Portugal. We already know about Portugal's amazing weather, food and people. In this podcast, we go deeper and meet the real people who make this country so wonderful. Dylan, who has made his life in Portugal, shares an insider's perspective into what makes Portugal the unique, beautiful, and amazing country that it is. Join him and his guests every week as they shed some light on the incredible people, culture, history, and lifestyle that makes Portugal so appealing. A country where everyone feels like they belong. This podcast is sponsored by Portugal Realty. Welcome to The Simple Life.
On this week's episode, I'm joined by renowned drummer and jazz musician Michael Lauren. Michael is originally from New York, but has been living happily in Portugal for the last 20 years. We discuss, amongst other things, his first visit to Portugal and what drew him in. The people, the kindness, the calm lifestyle and non-confrontational manner of the Portuguese people. We discuss all the things he loves about Portugal, including the food, the weather, the safety. And Michael also talks about what he wants some of his countrymen in America to know and appreciate about Portugal. For those of you listening, head over to our YouTube channel to watch some of this episode. And now, over to my conversation with Michael. Welcome back, or welcome to another episode of Portugal, The Simple Life. And it's a real honor to be joined here by Michael Lauren. Lauren or Lauren?
Lauren.
Lauren. Michael Lauren. Mike, thanks so much for being on the podcast. How are you?
I'm great, man. Thanks for the invite. And all is good. All is good. I'm in Lisbon.
In Lisbon, exactly. I've not seen CDs for years. It's like you've got there on the background.
I have a wall of CDs. Yeah,
it's crazy. If I had to say to my kids, look at this thing, they wouldn't know what it was. It's crazy today. These
it's
days.
Kind of sad. One knew that things were changing when all laptop computers no longer had drives for a seat
or cars
for that matter. Sure. I mean, I've seen changes going from the days of those 8-track tapes to cassettes, and then of course now everybody uses a pen. So it's okay.
Well, I remember as a kid having this is going to show my age, but I remember as a kid, if you wanted to make a mixtape, you had to have those double cassette players.
Sure. I had
Hit play on the one, hit record on the other to make your mixtape for your childhood sweethearts and sure. Stuff like that. Sure. Yeah, no, good times.
I still have a double tape recorder that actually works.
Yeah, yeah. These days it's just so easy. Just make a playlist. It's lazy.
Yeah, well, that's one of the problems in the world. Yeah, everything is gratification.
Exactly. Well, that's a whole nother podcast episode, so we won't get into that.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Michael, tell us a little bit about you to start off with.
Well, I grew up in the suburbs of New York City, about 30 minutes by car, a town called Great Neck, and Then I went to college at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland. I studied at Peabody Conservatory. I then went to Boston and studied in at Berkeley. Then I studied privately with the master teacher, Alan Dawson, who his list of students is voluminous, and including people like Tony Williams and Terry Lynn Carrington. And my generation, he was God. Great player, great man, great teacher. I learned
amazing.
A lot. And, yeah, it was great. I was already a professional drummer at that time. I mean, I've been playing drums since the age of 8.
Wow.
I went to the New York City, well, the New York style schools where music was really, really important. I'm 73, so I was born in 1950. And my brother played some drums. Well, just had a pad and sticks. And every time I watched him, when he would leave the room, I'd pick up the sticks and kind of imitate him. And then in third grade, you could go and join a band, school band, marching band. And that's okay. That's basically what I did. And I haven't looked back since, basically. And I did my first record when I was 14. Wow. I've been played with many professional musicians over the years. If somebody wants to look at my curriculum, that's easy to find.
Amazing.
And amazing. Basically, my family, my mother was a classical pianist. My grandmother was a ragtime pianist. So my earliest memories were sitting underneath my grandmother's piano and listening to her play ragtime, and also just sitting in my living room and listening to my mother play Chopin and Liszt. So I grew up, but I wouldn't say my parents didn't discourage me or encourage me in my musical career. My dad always just say, have you made it yet? And, that was that kind of interesting thing. Because I was playing with stars by my early 20s. So,
okay.
It's been a professional musician. I've had a split career of an artist and educator. I've done both. I mean, I have been doing both since the, I guess I first started to teach when I taught in a summer camp, a music summer camp, and when I was 17. And, I started, founded a founding member of a most famous drum school in the world called Drummers Collective. It now has another name. And that was in 1977 in New York. And, so I was always, performing, busy schedule, recording, live performances. And of course, teaching. So long days. Portugal has, those hours, how much I work. When people say, are you busy in Portugal? I knew moving here, I would never be as busy as I was going to be I was in New York. And that was one of the reasons for moving. But the short story of how I got here.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I came to Portugal was in 1998. I was invited by a student. I taught a lot of Portuguese students at the school that collected. And I'd been to Europe, played in Europe, I always liked the lifestyle. I was in my 50s, so I was always, and we became friends with this one student who was like the king of Portugal as a drummer, Rui Veloso, who did a podcast recently. He was the drummer for Rui Veloso. So talk about being that brought modern rock and roll, rock and roll to Portugal in one way. My student was really important in that aspect. And so he was the top session drummer, and he wanted to learn more skills. So we became friends because he was an intelligent man. And
well, those guys, I mean, Rui Veloso and his group and guys around that sort of era changed the landscape of music here in Portugal. I think people took music a little bit more seriously because of those guys in Portugal.
Well, at least the pop world and the rock world, for sure. And they raised the level of artistry, their ability to play the instrument, but also to play it in a very American style, in a clear, as I've looked at videos or I've listened to the music. They got it right. Yeah. They understood, what the American attitude and musical context was about. So
amazing. So
he invited me to come just on holiday, and I came with my wife in 98. It was the Expo, which is now the Park of Nations, was the
exactly
site of the Expo. Before that, they tell me it was basically a waste dump. So
it was a dodgy place.
It was remarkable that they this whole renovation and everything has made another city in Portugal, which is great. I would encourage anybody who is in Portugal to go there. It's a really interesting place. It kind of reminds me of places in the States, it's a built city. But it's great, and of course on the water. And so I came in 98. We had talked about maybe doing a drum school, and then I came back in 2000, I think it was, and I did some workshops, had some concerts, and I came back again before 9/11. Okay. I did some more workshops, and then in 2003 I decided, well, this was it's a beautiful country, friendly. My student, my friend, kept saying, you know, you could really have a wonderful life here, not only retired, but you can change this country. You can change our instrument. And I know when you change drums, you change everything. And he was, you know, said, man, you should really think about it. We could do a drum school, yada, yada, yada. And I came back with my wife for 3 months because I knew that 10 days or 2 weeks is a holiday. I mean, you don't really understand. For me, it was about the ability to live comfortably. I'm not a material guy, so I don't have toys. That's not my world. Music is my life. It always has been. I'm more concerned about teaching and playing. Mm. I knew leaving New York, of course, because that's where I worked. I knew that I was looking for something that was going to be stable. Of course, I wasn't looking to do $50 jazz gigs. My career in New York was great, but I also felt that it may be time to do something different. And the last, it was a school, the first jazz school in Portugal that taught, that actually gave a degree in jazz. This is 2003, I think it started 2001. It's the Escola Superior de Música de Porto.
Yeah.
And so I had done, this was the third workshop I had done there. And basically we're having lunch with the head of the jazz department, and actually the person, Carlos Acevedo, who was instrumental in making jazz a discipline in a superior level. We're having lunch, and through the grapevine, they said, man, we hear you might be interested in moving to Portugal. Are you serious? And I knew they had a great drum teacher, so I didn't even think there was a job offering. So I wasn't even asking for a job. Mm-hmm. But we had this conversation. I said, yeah, if something was substantial and it could give me some sense of security, of course. I mean, Portugal's great, and I think I could do wonderful things here. And I just left it at that. And when I got back to the States, I kind of knew that Portugal was great, but I was going to have to give up too much to go there without something that was, like I say, gave me a sense of security.
Sure.
Financial, basically.
Sure.
And so this was now August, end of August, and I get a call in late September from Pedro Guedes, who was the head of the jazz department at the time. And he said, Michael, were you serious about were you move to Portugal to teach in our school? And I said, yeah, I'm very serious about that. And he said, well, we're having some disagreements with our teacher. He's not as available as he once before, so I'm offering you the job. And basically I said, they'll tell me the conditions. And we talked, and then I said, well, how soon do you need me? And he said, now. He said, school started. So I said, well, now is impossible, but give me 24 hours. I'm the kind of person who, when I know something, I don't dwell on it, on something. When I make a decision, I make decisions. When I think them out, I think about quickly. I talk to my wife, call my friend, drummer who brought me to Portugal. And he said, basically, man, this is a job that will only come around once in your lifetime. Whoever gets this job, unless there's a problem, will keep this job. He said, Mike, move to Portugal. This is the job to do it. This will give you a base. You're working for the government. You have healthcare. I mean, it's everything that that any person needs. The salary is more than enough to be comfortable in Portugal.
Yeah.
And he suggested I live in Lisbon and not live in Porto. He had lived in Porto. Porto is a great city. But he thought that for me, for the things I want to do, it's better to be in the capital. He said, you're a New Yorker. I mean, many things. And he said, this is the time to do it. If you want to do it, think is it. And basically, yeah, I called Pedro back the next day. He was surprised that anybody would call anybody back when they said 24 hours.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, to go. Give me, you need to give me a month to
to get there.
My affairs here in the city. And,
so when exactly was that?
It actually, I arrived of November 1st, 2003. And I flew out Halloween night.
Okay.
You know, the 31st of October. And I arrived November 1st, and I was I slept for a couple of days because I've been partying pretty hard leaving.
All your farewell
parties. My wife stayed in New York City because I didn't know if I was really going to think this really would work. And it did. So basically, for the first year, the school paid for my hotel or paid for they had apartments and they paid for my travel. And then the next year, basically, they changed my contract and I basically found a small house in Porto. So I lived in two cities for 17 years. I commuted back and forth. Sometimes I would stay longer because I became within the first year, and I guess it was the second year, I became head of the jazz department.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're the guy to be head of the jazz department. So I spent more time, had more commitments, responsibilities, and I was working more with bands in the north. So there were times when I'd spend the whole month in Porto.
Mm-hmm.
Wife would come up, of course, and visit. There were times when I'd, you know, maybe come back to Lisbon for a weekend or a week. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I was just a commuter on the Alpha, the high speed train. I slept a lot, got a lot of work done, shut off my cell phone, finished a book while I was finished. I have seven drum books. And,
wow! Okay,
that was one of the seven. Finished in Portugal, and it was creative, productive. I'm always been a creative guy, so I know that I don't know if Portugal itself brought more creativity for me. It gave me opportunities that I didn't have in New York in many ways.
Sure.
It was a balance.
Yeah,
I knew there were really wonderful musicians in Portugal, and I've been fortunate to play with many of them. And of course, I came as a jazz drummer, but the reality of my career has been I'm a multi-stylist, and I've spent as much time playing rock, pop, funk,
amazing
world music.
Michael, what was, I mean, I think you're possibly the guest on the podcast. Let me, how's the best way to put this? You're possibly the guest, if I'm thinking back now, in terms of foreign guests that we've had on the podcast, you're probably possibly the guest that's lived the longest in Portugal, 20 years.
20 years, yeah.
Yeah. 20. But going back to those first visits, what were some of the things that stood out for you that you remember fondly that made you think, wow, this is quite a special place?
Well, you know, it's an incredibly peaceful country. It's a non-confrontational country. Culturally, people are not confrontational. You know, they're not in your face like New Yorkers are. That was one. You could just feel the energy. It was calm. People are calm. Of course, the Portuguese are incredibly simpatico. They have big hearts. They're interested in knowing about, especially knowing Americans. I mean, American culture is American culture. They've grown up watching American movies. Nothing is dubbed. When I first got here, even some of the children's programs were not yet dubbed. Mm. Then now I think all children's programs are dubbed.
Yeah, now they are, yeah.
But then they weren't. It's English friendly. People, I would say, you know, okay, if somebody doesn't speak Portuguese, the person next to him doesn't speak English, the person next to him speaks English. When a Portuguese person generally says, I don't speak English very good, they usually speak English very good. They like to speak English.
Yeah.
They're engaged people. They're happy people. I was awed actually by, you know, the tightness of families. Kids seem so happy. There's not that, at least in 2003, it was really inexpensive. The dollar was strong against the it was the euro, of course. And then the euro became strong against the dollar.
Back then, I think it would have been the scudo. Wasn't it?
Yeah. When I first came in 98, it was a scudo. And of course, like in Italy, you're a millionaire when you go to the multibank. I mean, you know, it doesn't take doesn't take much. It's a little different. Yeah, yeah. Italy was amazing. Multibank, you get like 300 euros, and it's, you know, it's a million lira or something like that. Portugal is a little bit better, but, you know, you can get 25 cents, a small imperial. I mean, you know, food, I mean, of course, the climate is perfect. The first time I came was in June. It was during one of the Saints festivals, city festivals, San Antonio. For that, and I was amazed that there could be 10,000 kids. No, it was no violence. Later at night, when people were drinking, and then it was a little bit more fighting. But early on, I mean, people were there were police presence, but it wasn't. There was no sense of tension between the police. People were allowed to drink on the street. Kids were incredibly friendly. And it's a nonviolent
city.
Of course, there. I guess in 2004 or 5, there were some drug wars. There was an occasional shooting in a nightclub, but that was very rare.
It's the exception as opposed to the norm.
Yes, exactly. And I remember when I was in South Africa staying with friends, we had got to Cape Town, and they had their gardener stayed to look after their home and their property. We got back, he had passed away in the guest house to where we had been staying. Okay. So the husband of the couple that we were friendly with, he called a close friend in the police department, and they came immediately, and they looked at me, you know, this is a unnatural death. And when he told me this, I said, how could it be unnatural? He said, well, a natural death in South Africa is when you've been murdered. This guy, you know, had a heart attack in his sleep. So it was, you know, so Portugal is very peaceful.
Yeah.
There's petty crime. But in 2003 or 2004, as an artist, the cachet for artists, jazz artists, was very high. The state supported jazz. There was lots of work, and that has of course diminished. COVID has changed everything, like everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. We'll come back to Portugal and music, because it is an interesting topic, and it's something that surprised me when I moved here, was how much this country loves music, all kinds of music. But what was I going to ask you? I mean, you mentioned you wanted a stable offer to kind of bring you across, you know, you wanted something in place so that you could at least be stable and everything, moving without, you don't want to move here without having a job in place and things like that, which is,
exactly.
I mean,
yeah, and I was the same. Although, I was known as an artist, so I had a cachet, and now I was, you know, I was teaching on a university level, well, polytechnical level, like a college in the States.
So I mean, well,
I felt that, and I knew because my Portuguese friends told me. I mean, I came with a cachet on my back, so that helped, and people were really helpful to make my adjustment really easy.
For sure,
people went out of their way to make life easier for me, I'll always thank them.
For myself,
and my wife.
I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if you had been just a normal mic, they would have probably done the same thing, made your life really easy.
I'm not so sure because guys, really? People were connected. I can tell you just a story. I was in CEF. I waited almost 10 hours. It was a zoo, it was not a problem because I had I had a job, but I had to go through the process. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And things I could do in 2003, you can never do it again. Well, how I got here, it never would have happened. Mm-hmm. It's just more difficult now.
And
to get a job like I did. So basically, one of my friends, he knew what had gone down, and his cousin was in the Ministry of Health. He had actually created, which is, an approach to drug abuse, which don't treat it as criminal offense. He's very famous.
As an illness. He was
very famous for that. You know, we're talking about, all kinds of drugs, actually. He sees it as an illness. It should be treated as medical. And so we're at a party, and I had to go. It was every year I had to go back to Seth. And he said, he came up to me, said, you're Manuel's friend, good friend. And I said, yes. He said, he told me that you're having some problems with Seth. And I explained to him what happened. He said, look, that'll never happen again. Don't worry. Tell me, give me your number, and give me 3 days, and I'll give you a call. I'll tell you what's going on. And basically, he called me 3 days later. He said, look, Mike, I have good news and bad news. So I said, what's the bad news? He said, well, I was talking to the minister of Seth, and he can't be around to meet you. He has to be out of the country. But the good news, and I said, well, so what's the good news? He said, the good news is that I have an appointment for you to see his personal secretary, and she will get you an appointment.
Oh, brilliant.
Not if I'm go see her. And then when I got there, of course, they tried to stonewall me. They said, there are no appointments. You got to like stand in the line and everything. I said, no. You don't understand. I have an appointment. And who gave you that appointment? And I said, the secretary of the minister of health. And I pointed to the picture of him on the wall. Then like everything changed. And so that's kind of, everybody said, well, who is, how'd that happen? Because when I got finally to the Balcao, which I waited 5 minutes, and the guy said, first thing he said to me, he said, so who do you know? that kind of thing. So I don't think that's not a usual experience.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not just Portugal, but I had many experiences of people kind of eased my way.
Yeah.
And so it's having friends. There were friends who were, have friends.
Yeah, exactly.
People tried to make my life
a little bit easier
than normal. I don't think it's, and like you said, I came here with a job, with not only a job, but a prestigious job.
Yeah.
That all makes your life easier. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but I suppose from a career perspective, it could have made more sense for you to stay where you were because you had that reputation. So what were some of the things that made you think, besides the career side, besides the job opportunity, what were some of the things about this country that you thought, well, I really actually want to give it a shot. I want to live here.
Well, like I said, I was in my 50s. I was looking for, it's a great place to retire to. The weather is perfect. It's just physically a beautiful, beautiful country. The food supply is still great. Of course, we're dealing with an inflationary situation, but relative to most European countries, it's still a relatively inexpensive living experience. And of course, in 2003, it was really inexpensive. We know housing has become a real problem in Portugal. But for me, I didn't experience any of that because I was here early. There were some Americans, of course, I have some art musician friends that are Americans, but I don't really socialize. They live further away. I have nothing against socializing with Americans. I love my country, but it's just not the way my life is, evolved. Yeah. So it was easy to get around. Like I said, safe, calm. When people say we're stressed out, they don't know what stressed out is when you're a New Yorker. I didn't have to work as hard, but truthfully, my life is my career.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a vacation guy. So I came here to change a country. I did the one thing as an educator that doesn't get that opportunity. And Portugal came really late to superior education. Like I said, And, you know, Graz in Austria is 70, I think 70 years old now. So Portugal didn't have a superior school. So I knew that I when I changed my instrument, which I knew I could do, I would change jazz. And of course, when I first got here, I didn't know I'd be head of the jazz department. When I was head of the jazz department, I really changed the jazz education was taught. And I changed the attitude towards there is no maestro menos in music. You can't be late to classes. My professors can't be late to classes. You have to commit yourself. I remember one year, it was the first meeting of the new students. And I said, if you're not going to practice and you don't love jazz, then I don't know why you're here. I'm not an easy guy. I mean, you know, I work with the best, so I know what it means to be a great artist.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to transmit my love of music. Their love should be their love of music, but more importantly, the hard work that you must do. And I really created a sense of discipline about your approach as an artist, and I've lived with the, you know, I'm firsthand. I've been doing this since professionally since I'm a teenager, so I know things about the music business when people think, you know, they're doing the music business here in Portugal, not really, not in the same way, not really. Of course they do. The classical guys are really incredibly well-trained. There were great jazz musicians here. But a lot of guys, when I got here, always came late to rehearsal. One of my friends once told me, when he was coming up in playing music in Portugal, popular music, basically, when you went to a gig, you could see three things. One, guys would be late to play. Two, they'd be on time, but they'd be drunk. Or three, they'd be late and they'd be drunk. People had a very light attitude toward being on time and drinking. I was working with a big band one day, a concert, and we were having dinner. And of course, they want some wine. And I said, I don't drink when I play or before I play. And they looked at me like I was
nuts.
Oh, yeah. They love to drink here. Because the wine is great. And I drink, but I understand my own priorities. Yeah. And they said, but how come? You drink? And I said, yeah, of course I drink. I said, because I don't play better when I drink. And they said, oh. And they, after that, the next time, they didn't, two of the guys just didn't really drink. I mean, I don't know if I influenced them anyway, but they probably thought about
it. For sure.
You know, I don't care if you drink or not, but if you don't do the job, there's something wrong. I mean, I know lots of guys who drink and they don't do the job. And I've been a leader of many bands, and that's all I say. I mean, you can do whatever you want, but you got to be on the bandstand on time, and you got to play as good as you did when you were straight.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things, I mean, you brought it up, a couple of times, and it's a common theme that's come up on the podcast a lot, is that pace of life that we have here. You mentioned you wanted to work less. I don't think work less. I think it's just probably more about balance and slowing down. I mean, there's probably New York is one of the most high-paced lifestyles in the world.
No doubt. And I was working, I was working 12, 16-hour days.
Yeah, yeah.
A really long time.
So what was it about the lifestyle here that gave you that balance? What was it about the way people live, the way that things are done here that gave you that balance that you were looking for?
Well, one, I learned to be more patient. You can't expect things to be done immediately. Even though sometimes it irritates me, but I think you have to embrace the Portuguese pace of life. If you try to fight it, you're not going to be happy. You don't have to accept it. Like yelling and screaming doesn't work. Being straight up does, because culturally people don't like to say no to you. So you have to learn that often they're not going to do what they told you they're going to do, but they don't want to tell you that. So sometimes, you know, you go to many meetings, As head of a jazz department, I dealt with lots of things. And I always say, I mean, it's okay to tell me right now, you can't do it. I'll find plan B. I mean, that's what life's about. So it's a two-edged sword. It's really great that you don't have to confront things. And there is a Portuguese way of just like letting it slide. And what I've learned, this is the most beautiful thing about Portugal. It all works out. So it's easy to, you know, I got to have it now. I got to have it now. And after time you realize, you know, it's better not to burn bridges. It's better to keep some things close to yourself. It's not the way I was, you know, brought up in New York. You basically confronted it right then and there. And then it was like, you know, show me time. Here it's kind of like, well, you have an appointment at 10 o'clock in the morning, but maybe they're not going to call you. It's better now than it was, of course. Sure. When, you know, if you had to get Mayo or any of the utilities to do things, it was you were pretty much guaranteed they were not going to show up the first time. I don't believe that's the case. I mean, that there have been two things societally that I've seen changed. One, you have to now pay for parking.
Yeah,
that's one. And two, they got their tax system together. What I think it was great about here, you can do things on a multi-bank that I'm not so sure you can even do in the States. They are technologically advanced. It is a first world country. When you look at the big cities, of course, when you go into the interior, you can feel like you're still in the night and, you know, early 1900s. Remember the first time I went to Porto, I was in a hotel and there was a rooster, you know, crowing in the morning. There were donkeys on the street. I saw all those, carts with donkeys with gypsies in the Algarve. Mm-hmm. You don't see that anymore. Yeah. There's the beautiful thing about, there's a man who comes along, who sharpens knives, and he has this whistle with a song.
Yeah, the special whistle. Yeah, you know, yeah.
Yesterday, I went to a Tashka in Lisbon, near the river, like in Braça da Prata, you know. Those kind of places are disappearing. I mean, the things that I think are the greatest things about Portugal that were so different than what I saw. You know, what I was amazed at, everywhere there's a television in a restaurant.
Yeah.
Everywhere. That there was that case in 2003, 2004, but the EU came in, you know, when you saw plastic bags over bread, there are many things that the EU has affected Portugal, of course. In terms of my needs was I could do still what I've always done, but I didn't work as many hours. Although I because I live in two cities, I kind of pressed my teaching together. So sure. by the end of my career as teaching, cause I retired at 70, I was still teaching, you know, 2 8-hour days with my classes, or maybe 14 hours. Mm-hmm. I like 8 to 6. A lot of people couldn't believe it. Nobody could believe that I don't stop for lunch. And I told my students, okay, I teach from 9 in the morning until this. There is no lunch break. If you need lunch, then don't take that hour. So I needed to find somebody who would take, you know, I don't.
The lunch hour. Yeah.
One,
yeah.
It breaks my flow of teaching, and I'll just, you know, I'll eat nuts, or, you know, I drink water, or somebody, maybe sometimes I'll have somebody bring me a sandwich, or if a student doesn't show up, I'll go and you know, get some food. But mm-hmm. Portugal stops for lunch. People care about food. I don't eat late. I still eat in you know, my wife and I, we still eat around 7 o'clock
That's early.
Yeah.
But Portuguese standards, that's what I feel.
Portuguese style is much later, and you know, people eat by 9. It's not as bad as Spain. Spain they eat even later, and you know, I think you still have to embrace that. Of course, my friends, you know, I go out to dinner. I know that. So, and it's okay. There's nothing wrong with it at all. But there's a love of life here that's different than in the States or New York. I mean, everybody's in a rush in New York. So I think those are the things that were different, but compelling to me. I was able to slow down. And like I say, I was able to learn. It's okay. Wait in a line. It's okay to wait in a line and not be stressed out about it. So, you know, it's like little, you know, like little things, because everything about one's life is when you move, where you are in your life is going to affect how, if you're going to move, and when you get here, what do you want to be comfortable with? And everybody's going to have a different experience with that. We don't have children, so that made the move much easier for us. Yeah, I have friends who would love to move to Portugal or somewhere in Europe, and they're not going to do it because they have grandkids. Mm. So, you know, that's my life. That's my life story. I mean, I said earlier, I mean, I am music. That's you know, it's not just what I do; it's who I am. So am I one dimensional? I don't know about that. I have I like to do, but it's still, I mean, now that I'm retired, the thing for me is to continue to be productive and
What do you think about the food?
The food, I think Portuguese food is great because it's not lavish. It's food. I mean, when I first got here, and it's still the case, chickens taste like chicken. Tomatoes taste like tomatoes. Of course, I've seen more things that are from hothouses, things that you didn't see before. The fish is great. The food, I mean, for me, yeah, if you're looking for fancy sauces and you're, you know, this is not the food. I mean, I love Italian food. And what also has changed, there are more restaurants, international restaurants in Portugal than there were when I first got here.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
We had a place, it closed because of COVID, couldn't make it through that. But, you know, it was bagels and, things that you got in New York and the owner.
How did the bagels stack up? Were they
great. They were great. I told them that. We were really surprised. Now there are other bagel places, but this was anyone know what I did? A musician, of course. I brought on my first record, which was called Once Upon a Time in Portugal, and he had names of artists, of musicians, for the names of the sandwiches. And one day I go there and he has made a sandwich in my name. You know, it was great. It was really nice. That was really fun. But he was really, really nice. We were sorry that he couldn't make it through COVID.
A lot of small places closed. Yeah. Michael, you were ahead of the curve in terms of the American migration coming to Portugal. Yes. You 100%. That's changing. There's a huge influx now of, not influx, it's a negative word actually. There's a lot of Americans looking to come here. Sure. And, you know, they're coming for, as you know, I'm a realtor. So a lot of my clients over the last 3-4 years are American clients and Canadians. Right. We're seeing this connection between Lisbon and San Francisco and these kind of things. You know, a lot of people are coming for most of our listeners actually are in America at the moment. Right. So say hello to some of your old countrymen. But
and my greetings.
Yeah.
God bless George Washington.
Exactly. and you know, you've mentioned a couple of the things that I'm hearing from other Americans why they're wanting to come to Portugal: the safety, the quality of life, the cost of living, you know, the non-confrontational nature of things, all of these. We don't have school shootings, these kind of things. What do you want American people to know about Portugal and why it's such a special place for them potentially?
Well, I think the Portuguese, I believe, understand what's important in life: family, friends. You can be material. I mean, and of course, these are generalizations. There, for every rule, there's an exception. But I see that as one thing. There is a sense of community. And when you on a Sunday, when you see families, you know, walking together, the kids are well behaved. they don't get crazy. I think that they appreciate the country they have. They appreciate the sun, the surf, the food. They love their country. And deep down, they're proud that they were once, you know, a unique historical country, a world power. Some people, you know, friends of mine will say, you know, the Portuguese have maybe lost their sense of adventure, where they had, you know, they were brave. And when they went looking, you know, looking to discover the world, that's pretty amazing when you see a caravel and you realize they were doing this. Yeah. So I think that's part. I mean, they love their country and they're always happy. You know, how do you like, you know, do you love my country? You know, and I happen to love their country. I did from the day I arrived. I mean, I think there's something special about it. Part of those reasons I just gave. And so I think when importantly, you should don't try to change. Don't make Portugal like America. I mean, I love America, but there are problems in America, deep-seated problems that don't bring them here. I mean, the healthcare system is great here. In America, it's great if you're rich. Portugal still believes in a sense of community. They take care. They try to take care of their poor. It's not a rich country. Mm. It's rich in one way, but if you, you know, the average salary of a Portuguese is unbelievable. That you can, I mean, now with inflation,
unbelievably low.
Yes, unbelievably low. People should know that. And of course, in Lisbon, and Porto, it's different. You don't see the real Portugal. And I've been lucky because I play throughout the country. When it's these small villages or these small cities, and they're great. The food is great. When you go into the Transmont, the food is killing. But the people are really, really warm and friendly. Yeah. And of course you're an artist, so you're kind of looked at. Again, you have a different kind of entree to who they, you know, who, how they treat you. I know that because I've been doing this for a long time. I don't abuse it because that's not who I am. So I don't ask for things that somebody else who wasn't an artist wouldn't ask for. I don't use whatever their vision of an artist is, and especially an American. I think, you know, Portuguese don't talk loud. It's not like Americans or Spanish. They're more quieter people. Mm. So I don't think you should be going into restaurants and bullying your way in for things, you know. I think you have to embrace the culture.
Yeah.
Not try to change the culture. I mean, was it, you know, Napoleon or somebody, or the Romans came back when the Romans were here, and some Roman, you know, government official said, forget the Portuguese. There's nothing, you can't change them. Forget it. They're impossible.
Yeah, well, Napoleon tried. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he did.
It's interesting. Wonderful. So I think... For Americans, they should look at what's great here. Don't expect Shangri-La. It's not. You got to realize why you're here, and don't try to change the country.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's good. Really
well put, Michael. Thank you. Yeah. Michael, I could talk to you forever. So yeah, but what is one thing that you want people to remember and take about away from our conversation? One thing that you want people to remember? It may have been what you just said, but
yeah, I think to come to Portugal, you'll understand why people love living here.
All right. Yeah. It's short and sweet like a beaker.
I think so. I mean, you got to get to the point. Exactly.
That's what a drummer does. You know, you're on point, so it's good.
I think so. Well, yeah, I'm direct.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate drummers because they make music sound good. If you've got a bad drummer behind you, it's a long night.
Yeah, you could have a great. You could have a band of excellent musicians, but if you've got a bad drummer with the excellent musicians, it's going to be a bad band. But if you have okay musicians with a great drummer, it's going to be a really, it still can be a really good band.
Yeah, I agree.
And that would be all styles of music. And, you know, that's why I said, if I knew that if I could change drummers, I could change jazz in Portugal.
Yeah.
And I'm proud I've done it. My students are now the, and I've taught hundreds of them, are some of the most working, important new generation drummers. And
brilliant.
And then, of course, what happens is you've changed a drummer. He's playing great. The other musicians say, man, I have to work harder. How did he change? You know, I mean, what is the, you know, your attitude, you know, or a musician now saying, show up on time. Don't waste my time. Why is your time more important than my time? I mean, in the end, that's what it's about. I mean, in New York, there were guys like that too. We would call it Latin time. And if somebody we knew was always late, we would say the recording session is an hour earlier. So he would come on time. That, you know, I think,
wonderful.
That is, you know, why I came here. Now, you know, I want to find that balance, even more of a balance of relaxing. It's nice to have, you know, time in my hands.
For sure.
I think there are other, you know, there were societal things as an artist that affect Portugal as they affect the rest of the world as artists. I mean, I think for us who make a living from our art, I mean, as writing books, you know, book sales for me have, you know, dropped off because everybody just goes online and copies them. I mean, it's a horrible thing. I mean, you know, I knew things were changing when we were no longer considered writers, but were content providers.
Come on. Exactly.
That's worldwide. So the things that affect art, and not just a musician, but art in general. You see this worldwide.
And,
I don't know how that story ends, but I know for me it's gonna end here in Portugal.
Okay, well that's a good place to end. Good place to end, Michael. How can people follow you online? This is your chance to plug some of the stuff that you're up to at the moment and do what you're doing.
You can go to my YouTube channel. On channel that gives you a good idea of the music and videos all my albums. I have three albums out that I did here in Portugal, all have videos for all the songs. My personal website is michael/lauren.com. I believe so. I hope so.
I'll find it.
I have a drum school in Lisbon, and that's called the International Drum Academy. So you can just go Google International Drum Academy. The reality is, you can just Google my name, and there'll be
You're not a hard guy to find.
I'm not a hard guy to find. And I'm happy to hear from people for sure.
Awesome.
What I will tell my American, countrymen. Every time I have an American friend come to Portugal, they don't want to leave.
Yeah, makes sense. We're examples. We're examples of this, you know. So
yes,
so, yeah.
I mean, I would say come and enjoy it. Come for a holiday. Of course, it's a great place to retire. And
wonderful.
And you know, it's been a pleasure. Hopefully,
Michael, one more question, it's a question that we ask all of our guests. Yeah. Portugal, the simple life, why?
For everything, you know, I've kind of said, it's simple because it is what it is. it has a way of wanting you to go out to have dinner, wanting you to go to the beach, wanting you to do nothing. People are, you know, people like to do things here or not do things here. So nobody stresses you out when you say, oh, I can't do that. They're not going to say, oh, got to do it, got to do it, got to do it. I'm sure there are people who maybe are a little more aggressive about that. But I would encourage everybody to make sure you don't isolate yourself in the community of expats that where you're from.
Yeah.
Become part of the culture. learn the language the best you can. At least try to learn. It's a difficult language. At least make the attempt. Be able to say certain things. It is English friendly, so there's no there. It is true. There is no sense of urgency to learn the language. That's good and bad, I guess. But you're better off when you can function.
Yeah. You experience the country in a different way when you engage a little bit more in the language and things. So
yes, of course. Yeah. And I did teach in English. The English language as a second language. Portuguese is a great language, but as a second language, it's still based on class, educational level.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are some people just not good in languages.
Yeah, for sure.
Like good. I said, it's sure. The simple life, it's English friendly.
Michael, thank you so much. I've loved this conversation. I hope to meet you one day in person.
Yes, I'm sure you will. Concert. Well, you did say you saw me once play.
I did. I saw you at El Cabasa. Yeah, amazing.
And I just want to just thank all the great artists who I work with here, including Rui Veloso. He's on my second record I did here. Rui was a guest singer on one of the tunes.
Oh wow. We have to definitely check that out.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And
good stuff.
And all the artists and everybody who's made my life easier. I can only thank them for that.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me, of course.
Yeah, you're welcome, Michael. I'm gonna let you call it.
It's a wrap.
So thank you once again to Michael, and thank you to all of you for listening. Please subscribe, share with your friends, give us a thumbs up, and please leave a comment or a review. We always love to hear from you. Don't forget, Portugal The Simple Life also has a magazine, so download it. It's for free. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode. And as we say in Portugal, um abraço. Welcome to The Simple Life.